All right, let's do that again. Good evening. Oh, sorry.
Good evening.
I say it as boisterous the first time around. It's not that. Okay. Anyway, Pesach is just a few days away. And just wanted to go through some basic things. First of all, about the laws of Pesach. And then just a few things about Pesach. And then I will tell you my message for Pesach. So first of all, about some things about Pesach, I'm just going to refer to, I'm going to share a screen and go to our website, our Chai Center website. And you will see that under Pesach, I don't know what you can see there, when you click Pesach, this comes up, I think so. Let's try that again. Click home, click Pesach. Right, that comes up. Or I guess if I click that Pesach also. Either one. So there are four topics that are here on the list. Select from the following topics. Number one, cleaning for Pesach. Number two, selling your chametz. Number three, searching for chametz. Number oh, I got two number twos. Must be a Jewish website. Searching for chametz, maybe that's why it's a little confusing. The Pesach Seder, and then doing Pesach the right way. Okay, so cleaning for Pesach. Again, I'm not going to go through all the details, but it's just a good little thing for you to be able to read, so you know that it's here. Cleaning for Pesach. When it comes to cleaning for Pesach, it's important to know what must be cleaned, what's advisable to clean, what is praiseworthy to clean, and what doesn't need cleaning. And then I go through those various aspects here. If you want to prepare your stovetops or your kitchen sinks or your countertops, those who want to go and do a little bit more, do a little bit extra this year, you have some cleaning things that you can. So for example, it's important to know when cleaning for Pesach what you must do and what is extra. You are obligated to get rid of all chametz. This is obligatory only if the chametz is bigger than an olive. If you have a tiny little speck of chametz, a crumb of chametz, smaller than the size of an olive, then you don't have to get rid of it. You can annul it using a special formula, which we'll talk about. You are not obligated to get rid of small crumbs. They are non-existent. You will have to do something called bittul. We'll get to that, hopefully. That means just annul them, which I just mentioned. And many women make great effort to rid even the smallest crumbs, and it is praiseworthy. It's praiseworthy to try and go through. But you don't have to. This year, I'm not feeling well, getting older, my back is hurting, and I got extra stuff going up. So I'm just going to, there is stuff that you need to do, and there's stuff that's extra. In other words, that's praiseworthy. However, since you don't have to get rid of crumbs, it's important to make sure that the pressure of cleaning on top of all your daily housework and family does not become unbearable and overwhelming. Okay? So just, you got to be sensible about it. Some people go overboard, and I've sent out jokes in the past when I used to send out the old email blast. And I was sending that picture of somebody foiled his whole car, or like silver foil out of the entire house. And you don't have to go so overboard. And then various things, cleaning for Pesach, part two, part three, all various things you can look through, preparing the oven, like I said. Now, the next thing, which a lot of us have already done, I'm so proud of so many people here. It's unbelievable. Selling your chametz. It's a longstanding tradition to sell whatever chametz that you have left. So if you're not going through and getting all the crumbs, sell it. If it if any chametz that's left in my possession, you know, some of my grandchildren are really good at getting chametz in toys, in trucks, in tinker toys. And it's like, I can't believe the places that they get these soup nuts, these little mini mandolin, where they get them into. And it's amazing. So I wouldn't know. I would have no idea. But if after Pesach, oh my, I found it. You know what? It wasn't mine. I sold it. It's sold. It's not mine. And that's part of the selling that we do on the forum that so many of you have already sent in. Things to know on the selling. If you're going away for Pesach, and we dealt with that on the forum. And the other thing is, the sale of your chametz is without conditions. It is sold, my friends. If the non-Jew wants to walk into your home and say, I'd like my whatever it is that's in your list that he's got because he's got the paper, because I print them all out to give to the non-Jew, it's going to be sold to. He has a right to it. He'll have to pay you for it, but it's his. And it should be a sale forever, not just Pesach. We happen to buy it back from the non-Jew after Pesach. But if the rabbi doesn't go and buy back the chametz from the non-Jew, it's not yours. It's a sale. It's a valid sale. So just know that it's not meant to be. It's just like a little shtick, just a little workaround. Now, we don't really do that in Judaism. And again, what's important to know is that you should not sell pots, pans, dishes, but you're only going to sell the chametz on the pots. Sometimes there are whatever, even if your pot is clean, there are times that things could be on the inside so that you didn't even notice the smallest little film of milk that was with Cheerios that was left on the bottom of the cereal bowl, whatever. It's though you're not actually selling the plate, the bowl, just what's around. And then again, you can click your chametz form from here as well. Searching for chametz. One thing we're going to do on Wednesday night is we're going to search for chametz. I urge everyone to search for chametz. And then the Pesach Seder. And there's a little bit on the Pesach Seder. Of course, most of you are coming to my home. Yay! We're going to have a wonderful second Seder, God willing, on Thursday night. Begins at 9:30 p.m. I warn you, come rested. and the 12 steps of doing Pesach the right way. This is something that I wrote, I think, in COVID. Clean your home from chametz. Sell your chametz. Now, when it says sell the chametz you want to keep, that may sound a little, not so right. What it means is that people get rid of their chametz. If you want to keep chametz, I want to keep my box of Cheerios for afterwards, so I don't have to buy a new one. Some people actually don't sell any actual chametz. They'll only sell things that are just not kosher for Pesach. Let's say I have a can of sardines. Nothing chametz about a can of sardines. There's no chametz in a can of sardines or my bottle of ketchup. But it's not a kosher for Pesach one. So I'll sell that. But there's no actual flour in there. Some people sell their boxes of Cheerios and their flour. So if you want to sell your chametz, sell it. Whatever it is that you want to keep, you have to sell. Number three, prepare for the Seder. Number four, light the candles for Yom Tov. The times are already listed under schedule, under your candle lighting schedule. I'm not going to click it now. Five, make sure it's dark before starting the Seder. That may be an old time, 2823. Let me take a quick look. Toronto is going to be, good enough. Really 8:30. You're going to eat your matzah, eat it after 8:30. Make kiddush on a cup of wine or grape juice, say the Haggadah, and then drink the second cup. Eat matzah, that's when you eat the matzah. After you have the first cup, you say some Haggadah, then have the second cup, then you eat your matzah, then maror, have a meal. Yes, I know I don't use it. I do eat after 8 p.m. And then drink the third cup. Say the rest of the Haggadah and drink the fourth cup. Go to sleep. Repeat the next night. Those are your 12 steps of doing Pesach the right way. Okay, I'm going to stop the share. If anybody has any questions on that, I'm happy to take questions later after the class. Write down your questions. Right now, I'm going to get to my address. So I sent out a sheet, a PDF or a picture, which I'm going to be referring to, which is really chapter 12 in Exodus, where the Torah, Hashem, commands us about the mitzvah of Pesach. This is why we have Pesach. And this is part of what we're going to say in the Haggadah. So I want to say as follows, from a Melech Biderman, he brings down that one of the halachas, one of the laws of baking matzah, we all know that the theme of Pesach, yes, is there's twofold, getting rid of chametz, eating matzah. You know, the maror, that's great, the charoset, the horseradish, all the, you know, the matzah brei, you know, all that is, you know, okay. The main thing is to eat the matzah. How do we make matzah? Matzah is made in a special formula. From the second that water hits the flour, one has maximum 18 minutes to be able to have a finished product. Because water, when mixed with flour, within 18 minutes, certainly by 18 minutes, can rise, begin to rise, the leaven product. And that is what is forbidden. That's when it starts to become chametz. Even though there's no yeast involved or any salt involved, it can begin to rise. So therefore, the entire process, and if we would ever go to a matzah bakery, of which Toronto does not have one yet, I say yet because we keep talking about it every year that we should start one, that you would go a typical matzah bakery, there's like a whole bunch of chambers. A window opens, like there's and then a bowl of flour comes onto a table in the middle. Thing, the door closes. Window on the other side opens. Special water comes and pours into the bowl. From that second, the clock starts ticking. Typically, the entire, and from there, so in other words, it gets taken and the water gets kneaded, you know, that it gets mixed and then the dough gets kneaded, separated into pieces, rolled, flattened out, and then they make, and they put holes in them as well. You know, that's why you notice those little puffs, call them that. Put little spiky things in there to give it holes so that it bakes faster. Then it goes on a into the oven. And by the time it comes out of the oven, the entire process is usually less than 13 minutes. The entire process. It's in the oven for approximately a minute. And if you leave it in any longer, it's going to become black and quite unedible. So it's a skill. It's a skill to know what to do and how to do it. So the Torah tells us, the halacha is, the Jewish law is that a person should not leave the dough idle without working on it, even for a minute. You can't let the dough sit. It's got to move. Once the water hits the flour, it's, something's got to happen. You can't leave the dough. And the Satmar Rebbe of blessed memory says that this halacha hints at the virtue of always being active in Hashem's ways. We talked a little bit about it in this morning's class, that a person always has to have something going on. A person does not have free time. We discussed this morning that I told you that from a Jewish perspective, there is no such thing as free time. Time does not belong to us, and we don't have free time. And I'm going to explain. The Divrei Chaim of Sons of Blessed Memory would say, if you don't have the strength to learn Torah, say some Tehillim. If you don't have the strength to say Tehillim, give some charity, give some tzedakah. But always be active. Call someone. It's hard. You know what? I can't sit there. I can't read now. Call someone. How are you doing? That's also something positive. The Talmud tells us that when there was one particular author of the Talmud, Reb Zeira, when he was tired, he would sit at the doorway of a certain study hall. And when the rabbis would pass, he would stand up for the rabbi. And in that way, he said, I don't have, you know what, I'm tired. I finished learning all day. I don't have any more energy. So he would park himself by the doorway of the shul, of the study hall. So when a rabbi would pass, he would stand up. And that way he kept himself busy. He kept himself busy throughout. Which means that just like the matzah, we always have to be active in the matzah preparation. We always, as a Jew, need to be active. And so Reb Zusha of Har Napoleon, a blessed memory, said that we can learn three things from children. Number one, when a child wants something, cries until he gets it. Number two, a child is happy when he gets it. As opposed to sometimes adults, even when we get what we were crying for, we're not always so happy, you know, maybe I want something else. And three, a child is always active. Unless you put them to sleep. During the day, they're go. And sometimes you wish, okay, and someone, you know, who put the quarter in? You know, like somebody, who wound them up? You know, like who's giving them all that sugar? And he says, the matzah also teaches us other important lessons. And in Hebrew, I don't have a whiteboard behind me, but in Hebrew, the way we spell chametz, and the way we spell matzah, two of the letters are actually the same letter. The only difference is in the way we spell chametz and matzah is a chet and a hey. And if I were able to put that up on a board for you, you would see that even between those two letters, there's very little difference between those two letters. And one of the things that comes to teach us is that sometimes it becomes very difficult to discern between what's right and what's wrong. There's just a little broken leg, so to say, between a hey and a chet. On one side, the chet is a complete leg, and in a hey, it just is a little part down here, but missing this top. Very little. If you don't look, you don't read properly, you can read it as the wrong letter. Coming to teach us between chametz and matzah, it's diametrically opposed. One is completely forbidden, and the other is completely required on the eve of Pesach. But sometimes, because the letters are spelled in our daily lives, we sometimes confuse what's right and what's wrong. And this, my friends, is the theme of what I want to discuss this evening. The Yetzer Hara doesn't tell a person to sin. Nah, the Yetzer Hara does not come to me and say, come on. Eat a ham sandwich. No. Not coming to me and asking me to eat it because it knows it's I'm too far removed from it. But sometimes the Yetzer Hara comes to me in all different conniving and contriving ways. Not only trying to tell me, get me to do a little this or do a little that, but to try and dress up a sin like a mitzvah. The Yetzer Hara is really good at packaging a sin like a mitzvah. And then he comes and he says, do a mitzvah, which is really a sin. It's just packaged like a mitzvah. You have to tell everybody else how wrong so-and-so is. Because of course, it's not Lashon Hara, it's a mitzvah. Because somebody else may get hurt in business or whatever justification there is. And then before going and checking with your local rabbi, you go and you, oh, it's a mitzvah. I have to say how terrible. Don't do business. One second. Maybe I should check with my rabbi. Maybe that's the Yetzer Hara packaging a sin like a mitzvah. I might think it's a mitzvah. Very often we are challenged with doing a mitzvah, but at the expense of really doing an avera. So the difference between a sin and a mitzvah is sometimes very hard to tell which is the right thing to do. Sometimes there may be two conflicting mitzvot. I'll give you an example. What if my parent, of which honor your parents, asks you to do something, for those who have parents, and then just at that time, somebody comes and asks for charity. I have two conflicting mitzvahs. Do I take my time and go and give charity, or am I supposed to go run and do what my parents ask me to do? And that becomes the subject in the Talmud of which takes precedence. Sometimes I do not. But on the flip side, says Reb Melech, that one can also appreciate that since there's such a little difference between the hey and the chet, that improvement also only takes a little bit. We don't have to make such big strides. People think, oh, I got to, you know, it's for me. I got to do something. No, a small little change can have such an effect. Now, I remember one of my rabbis telling me that when the United States was pressured, and they were told what was going on in Auschwitz, that all the mass murders that was going on, they begged the United States, you're bombing in Krakow, you're bombing in the towns around, just bomb Auschwitz. At least if you bomb the crematoria, it'll put an end to the mass murdering of Jews. Whatever they do, they continue to do, but at least get rid of the murdering machine of the ovens. And the United States says, we are actually not flying in that right there. It would be too much veering off our path. Now think about it. If I'm on Bathurst, and I'm going up Bathurst, and I need to get to Yonge, Bathurst to Yonge is... Bathurst to Yonge, they're both going north-south, and you know, I'm going this way, and I got to get this way. But that's if I need to get from here to there very quickly. But if the point where I'm going is up here, whether I go this way, or if I'm going this way, the truth is that the veering off is of a small degree in order to get to where I need to go. So the rabbis told you the United States, what are you talking about? You're starting from the United States. To get to Auschwitz is just a mere fraction of a degree over from where you're flying. If you just navigate a slight degree over, you will be right over Auschwitz. You can bomb Auschwitz. You're not so far at all. The change that we need to make as a person is actually very small. It's unfortunate that sometimes people think that the amount that I have to change is so great, it's overwhelming. But that's what matzah comes to teach us. One of the lessons of the matzah, the difference between chametz and matzah is minuscule. It's just a little break in the letter, the chet and the hey. I don't have that much that I need to fill in to make a hey into a chet. Very little, a drop of ink. And I'm a changed person. And that's the way I can be for the better also. Just a little change, a drop. Because as I set my target, one little change of a degree can put me on a completely different course. If, and we mentioned it actually not that, a few months ago, when an architect, you know, gives you your drawing, if the person lays the foundation and is off by a fraction of a degree, all the elevator shafts are going to be out of whack because they're not going to line up. It's not going to be a straight, you know, elevator, and your foundation has got to be straight, exact, and with the exact measuring tools. And people are the skill of being able to measure and having the wall straight is a big thing. It's not always so simple. Ask a carpenter. A carpenter can tell in a second who's a real carpenter and who's a newbie, a wannabe like me when I do carpentry work. They can tell. They make a line. You know, they make it straight. They know how to make it straight and it fits and it's exact and it's perfect. As opposed to me, you know, get a little wavy line. There's very little. The matzah is there to encourage us that there's very little that I need to do. And the following story illustrates this principle. Rabbi Yoel Dessler, Michta Me'eliyahu Zatzal, a blessed memory, encouraged his students to take something on, as small as it is. Take something upon yourself. That a person who takes something upon themselves, no matter how small, can make a huge difference, like we are discussing. And one year, Rabbi Dessler asked one of his students, "Nu, so what did you take upon yourself?" And he said, as a preparation for Pesach, he said that, you know, Rabbi, actually, I didn't, because I don't feel that something small is going to make such a big difference anyway. So I didn't bother. So Rabbi Dessler told him the following parable. A person from a developing country came to New York City, and he comes to the skyscrapers, and he sees in his hometown the tallest building was like maybe two stories, you know, like at best. And here we saw buildings, the Empire State Building, maybe the Twin City back Twin Towers back then. And he told him, you know, on the top floor, certainly of the Empire State Building, there's an observation deck. There you can see the entire New York City. Or like we have here, the CN Tower, but the story was told in New York. And the guy says, "Wow, I'd love to go up there, but I don't have the strength to get up all those stairs." He says, "Stairs? Nobody takes the stairs up there. Get in the elevator." So this guy has never heard of an elevator before in his life. So he says, you go into a room, you press the button to the floor you want to get to, and the elevator brings you there. So the guy goes into the building, goes into the elevator, but he was scared. There were so many buttons. So he didn't press any. So he's standing there in the elevator. And panicking, because nothing's happening, all of a sudden he starts pushing everything. And one of the buttons he pushed was the emergency button. All of a sudden, emergency services come in. And they asked him, "Which floor do you want to go to?" And he says, "I wanted to go to the observation deck." So they said, "Well, did you press the button for this?" He says, I don't know. And he said, "Well, why didn't you press the button, the top button, which is the highest button? You pressed the lowest button. Why didn't you press the top button for the observation deck?" So he said, "Because I didn't believe that pushing a button is going to get me from where I am all the way up there. I don't believe it. You couldn't believe it. He says, walking up the stairs would take me hours. And at least that I understand. You step and step and step and step, push a button and get from here to there. But as we know, if he would have pressed that button, he would have spared himself a lot of agony and a lot of time, and he would have been up on the observation deck 20 seconds later, 30 seconds later, whatever. People, and he explained, Rabbi Dessler explained with this, that people think that taking on something small is insignificant. But pushing a button, taking on something small, like pushing a button, can raise a person from where they are to such heights. Why not push the button? Rabbi Twersky, of blessed memory, uses this in the reverse. He explains that addiction is like a down elevator. And until you push the button that you want to get off that down elevator, you keep going down. Please push the button. Get off that down elevator. I don't care what floor you get off, but get off the down elevator. Push the button. Take something small upon yourself, says Rabbi Dessler. In this world that we are faced in, we are also faced with many challenges, of which really, at times, something small can have the largest an impact beyond that of what we would have imagined. There are 613 commandments in the Torah. But there is only one biblical commandment that we are left with today regarding eating, regarding food. And that is matzah. Matzah is the only biblical eating commandment that we have. We don't have the sacrifices. We don't have the laws of truma that we have to give to the Kohen or the Meiser to the Levite. We just don't have that today. We don't have the Bikurim, so many of the biblical. The only food eating requirement, biblical requirement that we have is matzah. People think, you know, for years, you've probably heard me say, those who have been coming here for years, make sure you eat matzah after whatever time, 8:30, 9 o'clock, whatever it is at nighttime. But we finish our Seder at 7 p.m. Yes, finish your Seder at 7 p.m. And after 9 p.m., eat matzah. Because that's when the mitzvah is, that's when the matzah, the small little mitzvah of eating, the simple, eat something. Who doesn't like to eat? Everybody has to eat something sooner or later. Can have such an effect. Even if what you take upon yourself this year, we talked about everybody should take something upon themselves, is that I'm going to make sure that I'm going to eat matzah after 9 p.m. local time, wherever you are. If that is your Kabbalah, if that's what you accept upon yourself, that's also something. That's how important eating matzah is, and eating matzah in the right time. Because if you eat matzah in the wrong time, it's like putting tefillin on at night. There's no mitzvah of tefillin at night. There's no mitzvah of keeping Shabbos on Tuesday. There just isn't. We don't make Kiddush on Tuesday. We make Kiddush on Shabbos. We have to do the mitzvah when the mitzvah is. And being that matzah is so holy, the way we use, the way we make use of this mitzvah of eating matzah, obviously, is we eat through our mouth. We use our mouth to eat. Hey, Rabbi, like, duh, of course, yeah, but I'm telling you something pretty important here. That the mouth that we use to eat matzah, to do a mitzvah with, we should recognize that we also need to elevate our mouth. During the time, during any time, but especially at the time when we eat the matzah, should be no loshon hara. There should be no chatter. I'm going to use my mouth now for the one biblical matzah mitzvah of the entire year. My mouth needs to be ready for that. My mouth needs to be ready for me to perform this once a year mitzvah that I do with food. And as the Teferet Shlomo, Radomska, Halakha Radomska, Zechron Yagam Aleinu says, here's, you want to write down this quote, that matzah is a spiritual medication. That's what it is. We talk about chicken soup, is but matzah is a spiritual medication. In our Torah, in the page that I sent you, the Torah says, chapter 12, verse 3. Speak to the entire assembly of Israel. God, Hashem is speaking to Moses, Moshe and Aaron. And tell them, on the 10th of this month, they shall take for themselves each man a lamb or a kid, not referring to a child, a kid, as in the animal, a kid, a young lamb, each for each father's house, a lamb or a kid for the household. So every household should have a lamb. That's what we use for the Pesach sacrifice. Verse 4. But if the household will be too small for a lamb or a kid, then he and his neighbor who is near his house shall take according to the number of people, and everyone according to what he eats shall be counted for the lamb or the kid. So the Torah is telling us, every household should have a sacrifice, should have a lamb. But let's say, I only got a couple of people. At the end of the day, I can't finish a whole lamb on my own. There's a couple of pieces. So then good. Get together with your neighbors and make a group and bring a group offering. This is the place where we learn in the Torah, the source, that a person can make a shliach, a messenger, to perform a mitzvah. There's something that I can't do. I make you a messenger to do it on my behalf. For example, when a person is going to make a circumcision ceremony for your son, you call a male. Really, the circumcision requirement is upon the father. The father is supposed to circumcise the son. But the father, not everybody can do that. It's right? It's left up to those who are trained and specialized. So I make the male my messenger. And anytime you are at a circumcision ceremony that's not done by someone religious, you know that they're not doing it right. Because by a religious one, the male will always say to the father, make me your messenger. And the blessing actually changes a little bit. Had it been, let's say the father is a male, I could. It's actually, according to some, a little bit of a different blessing that's said than when the male does it on behalf of the father. But we learn from this mitzvah of bringing a carbon sacrifice that when there are just too few in a home to finish the entire lamb, that we should get together. We should, and we can do it as a community. I, when I was preparing this, I was just thinking to myself, 1 year, God willing, 1 year, Mashiach is going to come. The temple is going to be rebuilt. And we are going to have to make a Pesach sacrifice. I was just thinking to myself how beautiful it would be if the Chai Center, this is our community, we are going to come back with a lamb from Jerusalem. We're bringing back the lamb, and this now becomes our communal Pesach sacrifice that we will eat on the night of Pesach. What a beautiful thing. So what that means, my friends, what that means is that we all need to get along. What that means, and I guess I was going to put out my theme, my title, is that it's principles before personalities. There's so many times where people maybe rub us the wrong way for whatever reason. But where we need to place principles before personalities. And one of the places that we learn this is exactly this law of the Karban Pesach. The law where we bring the Pesach sacrifice, and that the Pesach sacrifice is brought as a communal sacrifice. So I live in a neighborhood. I live in Wawa, Ontario. And there are maybe like 12 or 14 Jews in Wawa, Ontario. And the 12 and 14 of us are going to get together for the Pesach sacrifice. But I don't like my neighbor. I don't like you. I wanted to borrow your hammer and you didn't lend me your hammer. So now I'm carrying a resentment. So now it's going to come Pesach and I'm scratching my head. What am I going to do here? I need a Pesach sacrifice. I can't eat the whole thing by myself. So I'm supposed to really should go with my neighbor. But I'm not going to go to my neighbor because he didn't lend me his hammer. So now I'm going to just get my own lamb and I'm going to stuff it down and whatever else, be sick for the next, because I don't want to share with my neighbor. Of course, that's wrong. So Hashem says, make up with your neighbor. Love your neighbor like yourself. This way, you can have a Karban Pesach. You can have the Pesach sacrifice together the way it was meant to be. And the Torah tells us the joy and the happiness that we need to have in our lives when we eat this Karban Pesach, when we eat this Pesach sacrifice, that it reminds us so clearly of the story of the Exodus from Egypt. And I wonder sometimes, people ask me, Rabbi, why hasn't the redemption come? Why hasn't God brought the final redemption? And sometimes, you know, not everybody's whatever, but sometimes things come to my mind. And at times I feel like saying, let's say Mashiach is here. Let's say the final redemption has come. Are we all so happy? Do we all get along with everybody else? Principles before personalities. We're going to have the Karban Pesach together. We're going to have the Pesach sacrifice together. And we're all going to be so happy. Are we all really also happy to be together? And that is the joy and happiness that we really need to have as we approach this holiday of Pesach. I am so proud of those who have had personalities before principles and were able to overcome them and say it's going to be principles before personalities and be able to shake hands and walk away as friends. I am so proud. That little spark of peace brings so much nachas, so much contentment to me as I sit here. And as we talk to each other and we greet each other, to me, it is an expression of, this is how we need to prepare for more people coming aboard the Chai Center and how we welcome people into the Chai Center. That, ooh, they seem a little, you know, stone-faced, so maybe, absolutely not. Principles before personalities. This is our family. This is our group. I need to get along with everybody regardless of what that person presents or represents. Everyone must be in a category of, would you like to participate in our Korban Pesach, in our Pesach sacrifice? Everyone is invited. But really and truly, I want to tell you a story. I know it's not Wednesday, but there's no meeting on Wednesday anyway. When people do chesed, when people can come together and show principles before personalities and do a chesed, meaning they want to do a kindness without expecting anything in return, Hashem pays you back in ways that you could never have imagined. There's a person, let's call him Eddie. Eddie was told the story that when he was growing up, when he was a kid, his friends all of his friends would go away to, like, you know, I guess what would be like a cottage country, wherever it was in the States, they call it the mountains. Here we call it cottage country. Wherever you go, and all his friends, he was left alone in the city. He was very bored. So one year he asked one of his friends if he can stay with one of his friends, went to his grandfather. So Eddie asked one of his friends if he can go to his grandfather. Let's call him Mr. Cohen. Why not? If he can go for the summer. So he asked his grandfather, and his grandfather said, sure, invite Eddie. And from then on, Eddie stayed with the Cohens, with Mr. Cohen. He did not have a wife. Wife had passed away, and he had him for the entire summer. And for 6 years, 7 years, whatever it was, every summer, Eddie would go up and spend summer with his friend at his friend's grandfather's place. And Eddie became like so much like part of the family that he even started calling Mr. Cohen Grandpa. It was just a beautiful thing because he was there every summer and he was so grateful that he allowed him to come up. Fast forward 10 years. And Mr. Cohen was experiencing kidney failure. And he was in great need of a kidney donor. The word went out around amongst the community. And people, hundreds of people came to take swabs to see if they're a match. And when Eddie heard of the pressing need for Mr. Cohen, he went up to see if he could be a match. And he was told that he was actually a perfect match. And without Mr. Cohen knowing, young Eddie, went and donated, became the donor for Mr. Cohen. And it was only after the surgery that Mr. Cohen asked to see who his donor was, because it's done usually in the same house. They got to bring him close because it's got to go from one right to the next. They're like a neighboring operating rooms, and it comes out of this one, goes into that one. It's not like a heart transplant where they send it across the ocean or whatever. And when Mr. Cohen saw that it was Eddie, couldn't believe it. He was beyond. He said, Mr. Cohen did, from the goodness of his heart. That's the difference between the matzah and the chametz. Just that little drop. I invited him for summer. I mean, it was good for me too. No big deal. And that little chesed turned into what saved his life. The perfect match. No one knows. No one. No one knows where one's salvation is going to come. No one knows what little word, it just sipped, it stung, that sting of, you know, when you're, let's say on Yom Kippur, or when you're fasting, and for the most days, whatever, things are going fine, but every so often you may get a little, like a little growl in the stomach, those little hunger pains, or for whatever reason you're traveling, you just didn't stop, and you get that hunger pain. That hunger pain is actually to your benefit. It shows that your body is now doing internally, making up for your lack of food. It's actually, in some instances, it could even be the liver giving off the glucose, the sugar that a person needs to survive, because you're not eating any sugars. So the body, when there's no food on the external coming into the body itself is smart enough for a while to be able to maintain the body itself. And the liver gives off what it needs to, and the various organs of the body does what it needs to in order to keep a person alive. Of course, sooner or later, we obviously need food. But that's what those little hunger pangs are. They're actually good. It's a good sign. I like when I get those. It's not like, oh, I got hunger pangs. I can't wait until this fat. No, good. My body is working. Everything is working. Baruch Hashem, I have hunger pangs. My body recognizes when I need food, and it's starting to do what it can internally. And that is what the matzah represents. When we eat matzah in the right time and we ingest matzah, it actually gives us something that a regular piece of challah, it's different, that a regular piece of challah does not give us. It gives us principles before personalities. Challah has personality. What's the personality of challah? You like water challah? You like sweet challah? You like pretzel challah? You like round challah? You like raisin challah? With sugar, without sugar, with eggs, without eggs, with seeds, without seeds? How many different types of challah did I bring today to this morning class? You like sourdough challah, you like bilkis, you like longer ones. Sure. Challah's got personality. Matzah has principle. Matzah, principle before personalities. When we come to the Seder this year, should all keep in mind this concept. There's very little between chametz and matzah. Just a small little drop of ink to connect the hay to the chet. But the difference is enormous. And when I take a little something upon myself, this Pesach, now, in these next few days, and when I come to ingest this piece of matzah in the right time on Wednesday night and Thursday night, it can have an impact on a person's spirituality unlike anything else. Because I begin to recognize that it's principles before personality. Matzah has no personality. It's wafer. There's no salt. There's no sugar. There is no personality to matzah. That's the anonymity. Anonymity means principles before personalities. Anonymity means we're all the same. A matzah is a matzah. Bottom line, round, square, doesn't matter. If it's kosher matzah, proper kosher matzah, eaten in the right time, that's what is going to have the effect. And yes, my friends, it does have an effect. It has an effect beyond that of what we can comprehend. And I hope people can appreciate that, especially those who come to the class on prayer that we have on Tuesdays. And we begin to recognize that there's a lot more that goes on in Judaism than meets the eye. A blessing to everyone is that we should merit a happy, healthy, and kosher Pesach. Get rid of your chametz. Many of you have already submitted your form. Thank you. I'm impressed. More so than last year. And if you have friends, do them a favor. Get them to fill out a form. They might think, it's hocus pocus, whatever. It's not. It's principles before personality. That when Hashem should help, that when we eat our matzah, we've had something to think about. What can I take on? What's something small that I'm going to now say that in the merit of the eating of the matzah, that I'm going to take something small upon myself? Even as small as I'm going to eat matzah in the right time. Maybe want to do a little bit more. But something that will transform our eating of the matzah and will have an effect that will last a lifetime. Thank you for letting me share. That is my address for Pesach 2023, 5783. Wishing you all a happy and a kosher Pesach.
Shkoyach, shkoyach.
Thank you. A good Pesach to you and everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chag Sameach, everybody.
Remember, tomorrow night class is a men's, women's, men's class, men's meeting, women's class is still on. And this whole schedule is on. You know what? Before everybody leaves, let me just show you because we had it here anyway.
Where's the men's meeting? On Bathurst Street?
Yes, it is. Like last week. Hang on a second. Schedule classes. If you go on schedule of classes, you will see. Here we go. Where are we up to? Monday. Oh, here. Sunday, April 2nd. Okay, we just did this. Monday, April 3rd. 7:30. Men's meeting live. Women's meeting on Zoom only. Tuesday, April 4th. No class, but searching for the chametz, which we will do at nighttime. I will give you a warning about that. If you need more information, remember under Pesach, you can look under searching for chametz. Wednesday, 11 a.m., burning of the chametz in my home. We usually make a fire. Usually it's outside. And then Wednesday, there are no classes. It's the first Seder night. Those of who have registered, 9:30 on Thursday, second Seder at my home. Friday is Yom Tov, no class. Sunday, Avi Silver Memorial Kumsitz at my home, 8:30. Monday, where the meetings continue, men's meeting, women's meeting on Zoom only. Tuesdays, Yom Tov, no class. Thursday, because Yom Tov ends late, there's no class. On the somewhere, I think where you sell your chametz, it tells you when the chametz becomes yours, when we can buy it back from the non-Jew. And Friday, all regular scheduled classes resume. I will mention that Wednesday, I think it's on the schedule here. If we take a look under the candlelighting schedule, just to make sure that I'm saying it properly. Here is your... Now, on Erev Pesach, on Wednesday, when we burn the chametz, this is the formula that you will all say. It's right here. Any chametz or leaven that is in my possession, whether I've recognized it or not, whether I've seen it or not, whether I've removed it or not, should be annulled and become ownerless like the dust of the earth. Yisker is on Thursday. Next week, not this Thursday, but next week Thursday, April 13th, is Yisker. And if you'd like Yisker said on your behalf, you can send me the name plus the father's Hebrew name, and I will add it to the list. Those of you who have sent me the list.
Rabbi, do you light the candle the night before?
It tells you right here, Wednesday, either light before, light after, light before.
Yeah.
All the information is here.
Thank you.
And that includes the last days of Pesach as well. The entire schedule is indeed there. All right. On that note, I'm going to wish you all a great evening. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Good night.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.
Take care, everyone.
Wish you a good
night. Tada Rabba.
Anybody have any questions or comments?
Thanks, Amaya.
I'm happy to stick around for a few minutes for questions and comments. I'm just going to turn off.
I was going to say, that only applies to